Hunt, hunt, hunt.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
This is something that I believe Jason Wilde and I have in common. We both root for stories. So yesterday, as I'm listening to the dulcet sounds of Bob Uecker on our sister station, AM 620, WTMJ, and the Brewers are being no-hit by Paul Skeens, I'm kind of hoping he does it. I'm kind of hoping that the 22-year-old throws a no-hitter at AmFam Field. Jason, are you rooting for the story in that sense, or are you rooting for the crew?
I'm not rooting for the story because apparently I hate Livy Dunn, and since that's his girlfriend.
Wait, what?
What do you mean, apparently?
Yeah, who says you hate Livy Dunn?
So I don't hate her. But so yesterday, Tausch called her a great gymnast. And I am a, as you guys well know, I am a big believer in the precision of words. And she's not a great gymnast. She's a great social media personality. She's a great NIL athlete of the NIL era. But, you know, I reserve great for greats. And I was labeled a hater because I was pretty irritated that we would be conferring that word to someone who's like the third or fourth best gymnast on her team, the LSU Tigers. So God bless her, man. She has done a fantastic job of parlaying her gymnastics career at the college level into fame and fortune. But I'm sorry, the word great is reserved for greatness. And you can't be the fourth best player on your team and be considered great. You just can't. So nothing against Paul. I assume he did not succeed in his no-hit bid.
That's correct. He was pulled after the seventh inning.
Feels like you would have heard about that, big guy.
That's exactly my point. So yeah, no, I didn't know he was no-hitting them. I would not have been rooting for him because I wouldn't want anything to make Livy Dunn happy, obviously, because I hate her so much, from what I understand.
There's so much sarcasm in this conversation. My brain is like trying to sort through it, but I think I follow what you're saying. So yesterday, obviously, no, he did not get the no-hit, but this is a 22-year-old guy who is potentially going to start the All-Star game, got selected for the All-Star game. It's the first time in Major League Baseball history that a guy was drafted and then is in the All-Star game the summer after he was drafted. And there's a chance he will start for the National League. So there's a part of me that is just like, this guy's on another level. I want to see him do all the things, get all the flowers.
Yeah, I'll say this. I am intrigued by this year's All-Star game, which I don't know if I can say since like Bo Jackson was playing in the All-Star game or Fred Lynn was hitting a grand slam at Comiskey Park in 1983 and Robin Yount, four guys on base when Atlee Hammaker served up the grand slam gopher ball. So that's my extent of interest usually in the All-Star game, but after having Christian Yelich in the studio and him being back in his previous form, I'm rooting for him. And now I'll have to root for Mr. Livy Dunn, too.
Jason, in all your years of covering the pack, is it 30 years?
I cannot tell you how happy I am that you're asking a question right now.
Oh, thank you. It might not be good, but I'm asking it.
It's a different subject. It's all that matters.
Are you at 30 years yet?
This will be season 29.
Season 29. In your 29 years of covering the team, if Jordan Love does not sign before the start of training camp, will this be the second biggest distraction heading into a season that you've experienced?
Second two.
You know. You know.
Flight aware.
12 and four.
That's not a record.
I don't know what you're talking about. I assumed you were referring to that year that Sterling Sharp decided to hold out on the eve of the start of the actual season, which was the year, I think, 2 years before I got on the beat. So, I would say this. I don't think it's going to be as big of a distraction as we might think. But I do, and I've been saying this for a while now, so I'm sorry to repeat myself, but I do wonder what kind of impact it'll have on the really good vibe, really good juju that they've got going on, right? Like, I don't know how sustainable that is. Like, I'm writing about the wide receivers for my position-by-position preview for the State Journal, and, like, they're all, like, I think they're authentically kumbaya, all rooting for each other, all buddies, but that doesn't last either, right? Like, sooner or later, guys are going to want to get paid. Guys are going to want more balls. That's not going to last, and in the case of the Jordan Love situation, like, there is such a good feeling and vibe around this team that if he doesn't have his contract to start the season or to start training camp, and he's reporting, but he's not super happy about it, he is thinking about some of the risks that might be involved. Like, if that happens, I do think that it kind of puts a damper on the good vibrations, to use a Beach Boys term, since they played a concert last night up here. But distraction, no. And it's certainly nothing will ever even be in the same stratosphere as the summer of 2008. Like, not even the Rodgers stuff the last couple years of his tenure was anywhere close to what that was. I look back on that and I just think, oh my goodness, how did that play out the way it did? But hopefully, you know, if I cover the team for another 29 years, we don't have another repeat of that.
Jason, did you ever have any run-ins when Monty Kiffin was the defensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Any Monty Kiffin stories?
Not personally, but I do know this, and Chewy, I'm sure, has already said this and can vouch for this. The Tampa 2, for a period of time, was the kryptonite for Brett Favre.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he really, really had a hard time with it because, you know, he was a swashbuckling hero quarterback who did not want to dink and dunk and take what opponents gave him. And so I'm just fascinated, and Chewy can speak way better to this than I can, but I'm just so fascinated by how cyclical the NFL is and how smart the coaches are, that Monty Kiffin and Tony Dungy can conjure up this defense, this Tampa 2 version of a cover 2 scheme that really flummoxes a lot of really, really good quarterbacks and really good offensive-minded coaches. And then, after a few years, those offensive-minded coaches and those quarterbacks start to figure it out, and now you have to adjust. And the chess game, like, here we are. Think about Joe Barry. Like, the Packers hired Joe Barry because that Vic Fangio scheme that he would be bringing was really the kryptonite to the Shanahan, McVay, LaFleur offenses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, that didn't last very long. And now we're talking about this, as Bulaga calls it, you know, playing the run on the way to the quarterback, this Jets or Jeff Hafley system. And I'm sure after a couple of years, that'll change. Like when Dom Capers, you know, and Bill Cowher had the Blitzburg defense, like, people didn't know how to handle that. I really think it's fascinating how you think you've got something solved, and for a few years you may, and then no longer is that the case. And Monty Kiffin is at the front of the class with that Tampa 2 defense.
The funny thing is, Jason, if you really look at the Tampa 2 that Monty Kiffin invented, I guess, it's really not cover 2. It's really cover 3.
Right.
It's really cover 3 because the middle linebacker, when he determines that it's pass, just turns and runs. So we had a whole new set of plays to defeat the Tampa 2. And it sucked for me because a lot of times I have to clear out. But you think he created that? Jason, you think he created that just for Brett?
I do. I mean, exclusively for him, maybe not, but certainly with him in mind. Because you're right. The concepts that are involved, I mean, look, Urlacher and Derek Brooks, you know, the guys that really, because Lovie Smith obviously brought that to Chicago, and Favre could not figure it out for the longest time either. But again, it's just so dependent on patience. And what's funny is, you know, to your point, you know, lots of teams now, when you look at what the LaFleur and Shanahan and McVay offenses do, the fact of the matter is that it requires you to, A, scheme guys open and then take what the defense gives you. It really, the challenge for Favre was, can we go 10, 12 plays without making a mistake? And that's how you beat the Tampa 2. Well, if you look at what these offenses do now, that's kind of the same idea, right? Like you have to execute because you're not always getting the big play. And so, again, I don't claim to know nearly as much as you do, but there's no doubt that when Monty Kiffin and Tony Dungy were putting this together, I mean, they were still in your division back then.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt that Favre was a major factor in it.
Good stuff, Jason. We appreciate you hanging out with us this morning. Have a great one. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, everybody. Take care. Be good.
He's Jason Wilde. Listen to Wilde and Tausch right after Jen, Gabe, and Chewy right here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee.
If you're planning a fantasy football draft of your own, draft like a champ at Dave & Buster's. Book your fantasy draft and get 20% off food and non-alcoholic beverages and even free appetizers all season long. Get started today. DNBParty.com. DNBParty.com. Speaking of Dave & Buster's, the ESPN Milwaukee Fantasy Football League is back this season, August 1st at Dave & Buster's in Tosa. Select ESPN Milwaukee fans will have the chance to draft their own teams right alongside their favorite ESPN Milwaukee hosts. Make sure you're listening all day long to 94.5 ESPN on July 19th for details on how you can not only have your own team, but team up with one of our own.